Thanks for tuning in to KDNK. Benny B., town trustee in the house.
Yeah. Can you hear Benny?
You know, I can't hear, so you're just going to, I'm just going to have to talk to you the old fashioned way with no headphones on. We'll make it through.
All right. So what happened over there at town hall last night? Work session.
Work session.
No decisions were made.
That's right. Actually, we made it a special meeting,
which
means decisions could be made,
right.
But don't worry, none more.
Okay.
Yeah, because we had to have a little executive session at the end.
What was that about?
Yeah, exactly. So we did have a couple big items on our agenda to talk about. So work sessions usually allow us to dig deep into some issues, kind of explore them without getting all the way to the finish line on anything. So the first thing we did last night was talk to Bob and Joyce Rankin. Bob is our state senator, used to be our state representative, and recently got appointed to a vacant Senate seat in Denver. And his wife, Joyce, is our representative on the State Board of Education, represents the whole Western Slope 3rd Congressional District. So they just gave us a little update on things that happened in the legislature and the school board this year. So that was a good little check-in. We appreciate the Rankins and their local folks. So they represent a huge area of Colorado between the two of them, but they happen to live just outside of Carbondale. So we get a little
access. Any highlights?
You know, the highlights for Bob, he's on the Joint Budget Committee, and so he talked a lot about the budget, about funding for full-day kindergarten, which was a big win.
Yeah. Just yesterday, didn't Paulus sign something yesterday?
Might have been.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. So, yeah, he updated us on kind of big bills of the year, especially focused on budgetary matters, and Joyce focused on the READ Act, which is a law and some funding to make sure everybody can read by third grade, and some updates they made to that this year. So, yeah.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah, that was the first item. Second item, biggest item on the agenda that we spent over an hour on was affordable housing. And there's been a big housing needs assessment completed, and that was a huge study that involved a lot of surveys and data analysis for everything from Aspen down to Glenwood, all the way out the Colorado River Valley to Parachute, and even up toward Eagle and Gypsum. And so that basically gives us and other municipalities the data when we say, well, we think this or we think that, we think there's a gap in this part of the housing market, we think we need more of these types of units. It gives us the data to stand on. Yeah, so we talked
about
that for a while.
Any report on that? Data, is it as bad as we think? I heard a little something on KDNK yesterday.
Yeah, it's a really hard study to sum up, I'd say, but yes, generally it's as bad as we think. There are big gaps in housing in certain, you know, sectors based on income. One interesting statistic that I pulled out of it is that, you know, we all know this, but it documents sort of the cross commuting patterns. The fact that it's not like Carbondale's just bedroom community for Aspen or something like that, that people are going all different directions and living in different places. And it just emphasizes the regional nature of the problem. So a couple of little data points there. They looked at the Carbondale area as the 81623 zip code. So that includes all the way up the Crystal, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And it includes parts of Missouri Heights, where Bob lives. And it includes parts of like El Jebel.
Yeah.
So take that. Have that area in mind when I tell you these things. So Carbondale area, that they documented there are about 4,600 jobs in the Carbondale area. There are about 8,200 people with jobs, employed residents in the Carbondale area. So, you know, roughly twice as many people working than there are jobs in that zip code.
Interesting fact. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that fact. You can grab a hold of it.
The other one part of that is that of those 4,600 jobs, you would think, because we've got a lot more people working than there are jobs, that those would mostly be filled by people within that zip code. But they're not. So of the 4,600 jobs in the Carbondale area zip code, only 35% of those are filled by people who live in that zip code. So about 65% of the jobs in our zip code are filled by people who might live in Glenwood or wherever, Rival, Silt, Newcastle, you name it, Up Valley, Basalt. Yeah, commuting in. And then the people who live in our zip code, 80% of the people in our zip code, 80% of those 8,200 employed residents in the Carbondale area are out commuting. So there's this huge, you know, cross commuting pattern that's going on. And to me, what that sort of the so what of that is that when we look at housing policies and what can we do, this is really focused on workforce housing primarily. What can we do to sort of sustain, and I'll put it in air quotes, like our workers? You have to broaden your understanding of that. And so what, you know, the impetus for this whole study was Dave Meyer and Bill Lamont's interest in a regional multi-jurisdictional housing authority, something kind of like the way that RAFTA isn't just one county or one town, but something that kind of overlays multiple counties and towns that share a common interest and are trying to solve a common problem, like transit or like housing, going in together on that and raising revenue together, and sharing the outcomes. So we're still interested in that. There's no clear path ahead right now. But you know, it's hard with this topic. I think, I mean, when I did a lot of door knocking in Carbondale, when I was running for the Board of Trustees 3 years ago, everybody's top issue pretty much was housing, mm-hmm. and what can we do about it? And when you kind of look into our toolbox at the town level, there aren't a whole lot of tools in there. So the idea of working with Garfield County, Eagle County, Glenwood, Basalt, something like that, towards something that would raise enough revenue to chip away at the problem. It's a problem we're never going to solve, having enough housing that's affordable to our workforce around here. Is, I think, one of the only approaches that seems like it has the potential to make a serious dent in it.
Okay.
That was a lot of words. I was waiting for Bob to interrupt me at any second.
You were on a roll. You were paying attention last night.
That was a good summary.
Yeah.
Okay.
Feeling informed.
Kind of a couple of other data points.
Here we go.
The 60% or less of AMI.
What's AMI?
Average median income.
Yeah. Area.
Is hopeless. There's just such a huge hole.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
can you clarify what you mean by that a little bit?
There's just thousands of units needed.
Yeah.
So we need a lot more lower income units, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yes. And what they feel like one of their key findings was that people making 100 to 160% of AMI is the emerging problem. So people making $100,000 a year household are the next big problem.
And we actually heard about that from some of the members of the Planning and Zoning Commission joined us last night for the discussion. And one of them was talking about being a professional person with a spouse and both pretty good incomes, but spending so much on rent to live in Carbondale right now that they're unable to save for that down payment to eventually buy the house to really stay here. So at some point they'll have to make that decision of, do they kind of rent forever? Do they make major life choices about, you know, lifestyle and really putting everything towards savings for a long time, or do they move on to somewhere else? So those are challenges.
Factoid, 60% of the new housing stock during their study period went to second homeowners.
And my clarification there, the way I read that, it was
by value.
So, you know, you build one $10 million house up valley, that's a lot of the value in new housing stock, right? You're shaking your head.
It skews it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
What number would you like it to be?
No, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I do think it clarifies it a little bit, that it's not 60% of the total beds or square footage or total units. It's the value. And that's not going anywhere, right? I mean, there's some trends that you can't really fight. And
Resident occupancy requirements
is
one way.
And what's interesting about those, so resident occupancy requirement, for our listeners who aren't as geeky about this stuff as the three of us, is a requirement that says if you buy this house, you have to live in it, essentially. You can't rent it out. It can't just be an investment property. Those are in our current code, that a certain percentage of new units in larger developments have to be resident owner occupied. But that's one of the requirements that we are sort of constantly asked to reconsider and look at and ask, is that really working? But it's also the only one that targets that part of the issue where property values are really inflated by basically the investor market of people from anywhere saying, I need a place to park some money. I'll buy a house out there. And Let it sit there and hope it appreciates, and maybe rent it out and then sell it for an increase in value that's not necessarily serving the local workforce. But how you address that in a free market economy effectively is a real challenge.
I heard someone on, Amy was interviewing yesterday on KDNK talking about, was it the Renters Bill of Rights? Who is this? Are you guys tuned into this guy? I didn't catch his name, but talking about, you know, these renters not having rights because, you know, the house can get sold out from under them and then get bumped and that sort of thing. So I think it's somebody trying to look at it from a different angle.
Yeah.
Maybe then, because I think we all realize there's holes in the policies we've tried to create.
Yeah. And our main approach to this problem, the current board, so far, you know, housing prices are a result of supply and demand, and we can't really do anything about the demand. There's almost unlimited demand for housing around here because it's such a desirable place to live. But we have tried to make some improvements on the supply side by saying yes to some multifamily developments that are more geared toward the local workforce, that aren't big second homeowner kind of situations, that are large apartment unit types of developments. And then they still have to provide 20% of those total units, because of our current policies, have to be deed restricted, where you're income qualified. So you're making sure that it's for kind of the lower income levels on that spectrum. But, you know, is that enough? So for every 100 units, 20 of them will be restricted in some way. And hopefully the other 80 will not be just for kind of a second homeowner population or whatever.
But sounds like Bill and Dave's intention is to lay the groundwork for a regional conversation about what are people willing to do or not do about that.
Yep. And we're interested in moving that conversation forward.
What else was on the agenda?
Bob's favorite topic.
Trash.
So I'm actually going to a meeting at Town Hall in just an hour or two here to talk about just the public outreach around this. So if you haven't heard enough about it from me here on the radio over the past few months, you'll be hearing more about it, that starting June 3rd, Carbondale residents, you can sign up for new trash service that's going to be provided by one hauler that the town has contracted. And basically the default level of service is a 64-gallon bin, holds about 5 kitchen bags. It's picked up every week, and a equally large 64-gallon recycle bin that's picked up every other week to save a little money on the routes and the hauling there and keep the prices low. So I would just say everybody, you know, keep your eye out for that information. We're also at the same time switching over our billing system to a more modern system. So if you're paying automatically through your credit card or whatever, you'll have to re-enter that information. But we're hoping for a really smooth transition. And we're really hoping that everybody engages in the process and says, hey, I can save money by producing less trash. So I'm going to go for one of these smaller sizes, the 32-gallon or the 64-gallon. The standard big size that most people have today is huge. It's a 96-gallon. And I think very few people really fill that up with trash every week. We're also going to have yard waste drop-off sites all summer, starting next summer once this is kicked in. It's going to kick in October, and we'll still have the fall leaf days and all that as usual. But if your only reason for needing that huge bin is your yard waste, well, you don't need that huge bin for your yard waste because you'll be able to drop that off. And we're going to encourage people to compost. There are two local haulers who both provide composting services, and backyard compost and all that kind of stuff. So we're trying to reduce, reuse, recycle. And that whole thing is, information is at carbondalegov.org/trash. And you're going to hopefully be overwhelmed with information over the next few weeks. And then sign up in June.
Hey, is there any hazardous waste?
He's got a phone call coming
to
in.
This.
Uh-oh.
Hi, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'd like to ask a question about that trash thing. Is it possible to have smaller bear-proof containers, or do we have to go, if you've got a bear-proof one, do you have to go with the bigger ones?
So the question is, are there small bear-proof containers?
Oh, man, on the sheet that I have here in front of me, it doesn't say that. I know that we've talked about that a lot, and I can't remember if our final option includes bear proof for the medium and the large or just the large. But take a look at carbondalegov.org/trash and let's see if it's on there. And yeah,
I'm not 100%. The town is hiring a trash czar?
A trash czar? No, it's hiring somebody to manage the administration of this project. So just like any trash hauling company has somebody who does their billing and sign up and deals with their customers.
Is that person on board? Can the gentleman that just called call the trash czar and get the answer to that?
I'm not sure about that. So, you know, Jay, our town manager, he's been like saying, let's be a little bit careful about encouraging everybody to get on this right now because we're not actually ready for signups until June 3rd. Okay. So we're still putting the information together right now.
All right. We can bring back the answer to that question, though.
We sure can. Yeah. I can probably find out the answer to that question in about an hour.
Uh-oh. May have opened a can of worms there, man.
All right.
Oh, they hung
I'm ready.
Up.
Okay.
So that was it. That it?
That's hey, it. What about this thing happening in Glenwood with the bank buying out this block and putting out, what is it, 5 or 6 local businesses?
I don't know anything about
you
that.
Oh, just that was the news yesterday. There's a block. Apparently a bank is going to come in, out-of-town bank, and it's now 6 businesses right on Main Street in Glenwood, or Grand, I guess it is, are going to have to move.
Bob's got a caller.
Yep.
Hi, caller. You're on the air.
Hi. I put out my recyclables yesterday, and because it was raining, I put my cans and bottles on top of my newspapers so it wouldn't get wet, and the trash haulers picked up the cans and bottles, but they didn't pick up the newspapers. They left them there. Should I expect that?
What do you think there, Benny B. Town Trustee?
You know, that's an interesting one since we're not involved in that right now. I'd say call your trash hauler and tell them about that. I mean, there will always be, you know, occasional issues when they're picking stuff up. Oh, man, that's okay.
Thanks for checking in. That's we'll add that to the list of questions for the new trash czar.
Yeah.
Okay, do I call Rocky Mountain Disposal?
You call whoever your current trash hauler is. It's not the town yet.
Okay.
Whoever bills you, whoever you pay.
That'll start in September, is it?
It'll start in October, so we're signing up in June, and we're starting service in October.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, it's good to know people are listening out there.
Yeah. People have questions.
People are interested. And just keep in mind the goals of this switchover are to make it easier for people to get a bear-proof container, because in the past, the town might say, hey, you've got a bear in your trash, you have to get a bear-proof container, and your hauler might say, well, we don't provide those, and Ace Hardware might say, well, we don't either, and you might be kind of stuck. So part of this is about reducing the wildlife access to trash. Part of it's about encouraging people to not just throw stuff away, but to reduce and recycle and compost and all that by making it where the less you throw away, the less you waste, the less you spend, as it says on this handy flyer in front of me here. And to reduce the number of trucks on the road. So we've heard for a long time that people don't like having 4 trash trucks and 4 recycle trucks and a couple compost trucks all go by their house on a Tuesday. So that'll be reduced, and cost containment. So it's by getting a large contract, we're able to keep the costs under control. And people have been complaining for a long time that their haulers keep increasing their costs.